meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. That whooshing wind means that I am here with my co-host, Loretta Frelick. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. And it is my pleasure, along with Loretta's, I know I can speak for her here, to sit in for Father Anthony today, as we do most Mondays. So hope that you all had a good weekend. Loretta, how was yours?
Well, mine was excellent. Good. However, I did a little sadness this weekend. Our wonderful pastor, Father John Schmidt, is leaving St. Luke's to go up to Our Lady of Ransom. So yeah,
that's a big loss.
It's a huge loss.
Yeah, that's and a big loss. He's a very good priest.
He is. And yeah. He's, you know, and he's just a wonderful man.
Yeah.
And the compassion that he has shown our parishioners, you know, through the life of the church in the sacraments and funerals and
A great thinking man, an engineer by training,
right.
Gives me a perfect segue into introducing our next guest, former Congressman Dan Lipinski, who was also an engineer by training. He served the Congress representing Illinois' 3rd District from 2005 to 2021. Congressman Lipinski, thank you for being with us today. Congressman Lipinski, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for joining us today. So good to be able to have you on the show. I know right now you are one popular and in-demand person to speak to because of a terrific article that you had published last week on June 25th in First Things in their exclusive web edition called Catholic Politicians, Abortion, and the Eucharist, which has been an incredibly and much-discussed topic, not only in the religious media, but also in the secular media as well. So thank you so much for making the time for us today.
Well, it's good to be with you, and I'm just very happy that the article has been received so well, and I think it takes a little bit, you know, different look at the issue, and it's, you know, I have a unique perspective from which to my view of this, having served 16 years in the House of Representatives, and these are some of my former colleagues, some people who I still call friends. So I thought it was very important to respond to this.
Congressman, this is Mary's co-host, Loretta Frelick, and as we begin this discussion, I really just want to thank you, because some of my other hats have been parish coordinator of Respect Life Issues, and it's so terrific to see that you are still working in the trenches with us as a champion for life. And like you just said, you're taking your 16 years experience and you are still out there setting us straight. And so I want to really thank you for all the years we were able to be hopeful in Congress with you there holding back the onslaught
but of insanity that is coming upon us.
Thank you that you are still hopeful, and thank you that you have continued to take up the challenge, but from another vantage point. And so our prayers go with you, and thank you for all that you do.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, so Dan, this is Mary calling again. This is Mary Fiorito speaking again. And, you know, what I'd like to start with, and I like how, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, you have training as an engineer, and with an engineer's precision, you go through the issue step by step in a way that I think that addressed it so clearly, and again, breaking it down into pieces so that people could really understand what was at stake. Can you tell me did you get the idea to do this the minute you read the letter from the 60 Catholic congressmen? And, you know, actually, why don't we back up for a moment? Can you explain the impetus for this, which is the letter that was sent, I believe, to the U.S. bishops by 60 sitting congressmen now, all of whom self-identify as Catholics?
Well, it seems almost immediately after the USCCB voted to draft a statement on Eucharistic coherence, which the media has focused on as simply being a political statement, which it's not intended to be, but a political statement about Joe Biden and whether or not he should receive communion. Whether or not he should be denied communion,
right,
by the bishops. But it's much more more broad than that. What the bishops are. The statement now that they have voted that they will draft and they consider in their meeting in November. But as soon as that vote was taken, the 60 Democratic members of the of Congress issued a what they call a statement of principles, saying using the now popular phrase, don't use the Eucharist as a weapon, don't mm-hmm. weaponize the Eucharist, but essentially saying, look, we're good Catholics, but we support legal abortion, don't deny any of us communion. And that was essentially what it was. I mean, it's the types of things that we have heard over a number of years. But it was the first time that it was sort of put down in one succinct statement, and 16 members of Congress signed it, essentially saying, we are Catholic, but we support legal abortion, and we're still good Catholics.
What I found, I know there's nothing funny about this, but I found this funny because it was just so absurd, to see people like Marie Newman and Chuy Garcia and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ted Lieu quoting John Paul II's apostolic exhortation, Christi Fidelis Laici. Somehow I think that they didn't write this. And I get the sense that someone else was assisting them. That and the fact that it came out so quickly. It clearly had been prepared in advance. I thought Ted Lieu was particularly offensive in tweeting out, and I imagine you have seen this tweet or it's been brought to your attention, tweeting out that listing, dear U.S. bishops, here's a list of all the things I disagree with the church on. And it was everything from abortion on demand to marriage, to the sanctity of marriage. And next time I go to church, I dare you not to give me communion, which I thought, back in my day, if he had had to tangle with my old pastor, Monsignor Ed Pellicore, who's now gone to be with the Lord, God rest his soul, there would have been quite the bloodbath in church, I think. And I doubt Mr. Lieu would have won the battle because...
Mary, our own mothers would be.
My goodness, no. I mean, I remember one time when there were two kids in front. The older sister was supposed to be watching the other two. And the pastor from the pulpit during the homily yelled at him and said, hey, knock it off. You're at Mass. Behave yourself. I mean, and now we've gone from this to now. I also thought it was interesting that he used the phrase, next time I go to Mass. That didn't give me the impression he was going every Sunday. I was highly tempted to tweet back, wait, you're not going Sunday? What do you mean next? What do you mean next time? Do you have any thoughts on that? I know you referenced it in another interview that you did with a different outlet, that you yourself seem to be surprised by the theological depth of this particular letter and quoting, The Vatican Council's Constitution on the Sacred Liturgy, for example. I had no idea Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was reading such documents. Did that come as a surprise to you as well?
Well, I know how these things work. If you're a member of Congress, people come to you and have something pre-written and ask you to sign on to it. I don't know where this came from. I don't know who
was behind
wrote
it. Yeah. Yeah, but it strikes you. The theological language in it. You know, for as much hue and cry as we've heard about the separation of church and state, there's a whole lot of theology in that letter. And I was surprised, in fact, that it went so far in terms of theological discourse, given that they have been, you know, it's been interesting to see, like, the different groups who have been tweeting about this issue. The entire week the bishops were debating whether or not they were going to draft this document. And again, you know, so everyone's clear, this was not a debate on denying Joe Biden Holy Communion. This was a discussion about whether or not a particular committee of the bishops would draw up a document that would help Catholics to better understand what the church teaches about the Eucharist. We know recent Pew polls and other studies have shown us that we now have more Catholics than not who believe the Eucharist is just a symbol, who do not believe that it's Jesus himself.
70%.
Right. So that's what they were voting on. They weren't voting specifically on Joe Biden, although the Biden presidency does present kind of a unique set of circumstances. And Congressman, can you just, from your vantage point, I know, you know, you're familiar with this because you were a champion of such varied pro-life legislation. Can you give the listeners a little bit of a sense on kind of how far out Joe Biden is in terms of his administration, his own public policy positions, and some of his executive orders so far?
Well, Mary, you probably know this and follow this more closely.
Okay,
than,
I'll correct you if you're wrong then.
Than I do.
No, but you have, I know in particular, Dan, you have been such a champion of the Hyde Amendment, and that has, and rightly so, it has the vast majority of Americans in agreement with it. Can you explain that? Because that was President Biden's most recent offense against the pro-life community, was leaving that out of his submitted budget.
Well, you know, Joe Biden said last year during the Democratic primaries for president that after, 40 years of in public life, as a senator, vice president, he had supported the Hyde Amendment that prevents federal funding for abortion,
mm-hmm.
That he had changed his position on that.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly that was a... you know, as I've talked about in the last 4 years, especially, it's become necessary if you want to run for especially federal office as a Democrat that you had to endorse the extreme agenda of the abortion lobby.
Right.
And Joe Biden understood, that's the way I saw it. You know, I can't look into Joe Biden's heart, but it's clear that if he did not say that, he was in a tough primary fight, and it would have been extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But that is that has been a new sort of demand of the abortion lobby.
Right.
And so Joe Biden had said that he had changed his mind on the Hyde Amendment, and he no longer supported it. So it really wasn't a surprise when his budget was released about a month ago, so that the Hyde Amendment was not included in there.
Right.
So what all of your listeners need to be aware of is, the president's budget is basically a suggestion. Congress writes the budget. Congress, in the Constitution, Congress is given the power,
right,
to spend the money, and so any president's budget is just a suggestion. It really comes down to what are the House and Senate going to do? Will the House and Senate include the Hyde Amendment? Because every year it must be included. It's a yearly. It's not a permanent law. It's just a what's called a rider. It's just attached to the Health and Human Services spending bill.
Okay.
That says no, you know, no taxpayer funding for abortion or for insurance, healthcare coverage that covers abortion. And so this is a battle that's going on right now in Congress, and that's something that everyone needs to be aware of.
Right.
And, you know, it's really important at this time for people to have their voices heard. As you said, you know, a good majority of Americans oppose their taxpayer dollars funding abortion.
Right.
And so it's time for people to be heard and let their representatives and senators know that they do not want their, you know, their tax dollars spent this way. And
right.
So the Hyde Amendment needs to be included in the spending bills, which are, you know, the House and the Senate right now are both working on.
Well, you know, what I thought was interesting was that, you know, during this whole conversation about the bishops, that the groups, the different pro-abortion groups who were tweeting out in favor of the bishops who did not want the document to be drafted. I mean, the National Abortion Rights Action League, for all of, you know, again, the human cry about separation of church and state, was happy to try to tell Catholic bishops what they should and should not be drafting, which I thought was kind of interesting. Catholics for Choice, which is another very extreme abortion group, kept tweeting out things like, you know, 70% of American Catholics believe in Roe versus Wade. Well, I would also venture that 70% of American Catholics couldn't tell you what Roe versus Wade held, which is, well, you know, but that's the vast majority of Americans don't realize abortion all 9 months for any reason. And that, you know, the vast majority of Americans do not believe that that is a humane law. It has no consensus in public opinion. It has no consensus in the medical community either. I mean, you know, you even talk to OBGYNs who do early abortions, and they don't want to do them after 15, 16 weeks. So so Roe's allowance for all 9 months for any reason, even things like sex selection, that is not where the hearts of the American people are. And frankly, it's not where the rest of the civilized world is. I mean, we're only one of seven nations in the entire world, including North Korea and China. So we're in good company, I guess. At least we're consistent in that regard, who permit abortion for all 9 months. But Congress, but just to go back to your letter, I mean, again, it's so well laid out. Did you just, when you were writing it, did you just feel the words coming to you, or was this something you kind of thought and prayed about before you did? You know how sometimes you just feel like the words just come to the paper. This is just so well done. I'd be interested in kind of hearing about the process that you went through to draft it.
Well, you know, you some things that you read or hear and you have immediate gut reactions to them and feelings about it. And now I knew I needed to take a step back from that and really, you know, address this, you know, in a very serious and well-considered manner. And really, you know, there's a lot. I spent a lot of time thinking about this.
Right.
I spent time praying about this. I brought my, and some people may not approve of this, I brought my computer into Adoration Chapel.
Do you know who used to do
over
that?
Here.
Fulton Sheen used to do that. He used to write his homilies in front of the Blessed Sacrament. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Well, see, you are in good company. See?
Good. That's good to hear, because I was trying to type very quietly. but I was a little concerned.
That's very good.
But really, it made me reflect on my own thought,
yeah,
and my own treatment of the Eucharist and Holy Communion,
right?
And so I thought, you know, it was helpful to me. That's why I think it's important. It's so easy to jump into politics immediately and have a visceral reaction to something, but this is, you know, especially on this, we. That's not what we should be doing. We should really be, and I think this is the direction that the bishops are going.
Right.
What exactly this looks like, and what people focus on in the end, we'll see. But I think their purpose is to bring Catholics' attention to the Eucharist, who it is,
right,
what that means,
right,
and how they should approach Holy Communion.
Right, right.
And this is a teaching document, and there is a part of the, I may have mentioned this in the interview that I did with the Pillar, I'm not sure I did or not, that there was a part in this First Things article that talked about, you know, I used to be I was an assistant professor of political science before I ran for Congress. So I was at Notre Dame and at the University of Tennessee, and I know there's different ways to teach,
right?
And you know, there are. So I think that's what the bishops, that's a big thing that bishops are dealing with, is how, you know, how do you properly teach? What's the best way to teach? But, and I know there are some teachers who, you know, I'll just say teachers have different ways of teaching, but sometimes, you know, I found that some teaching methods that are not very popular with the students at the time are good ways, the best ways to help them learn. And so I think that's something that the bishops need to consider. I'm not going to tell them what they should do, but I think that's a big part of it. How are they going to teach it, and especially teach all of us Catholics, but also teach leaders. And I think that's really important also. Is the people who, you know, we view people who are in public life, who are Catholic, to teach them about the Eucharist and proper reverence, and how we, that we need to be in a state of grace in order to receive Holy Communion. Now, in 2006, the bishops put out a document, which I went back and I read that. And so that was very, I thought that was very useful, that it kind of disappeared after they put that out, but it talked about, you know, this needing to be in a state of grace, and some things that, you know, if you're in a state of mortal sin, you should refrain from receiving Holy Communion. So I think these are things, obviously, that need to be taught again and over and over.
Now, Congressman, you just said that you would not presume to tell the bishops how they should teach. But will you tell us? How should the bishops teach?
Mm. Well, I think that's the same question.
Okay.
No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm sure you have your thoughts on it, but I just think, especially right now, we all need to take a step back and pray about this. And I'm very happy that the bishops are going to do this document. I think it would have been a huge mistake if they did not. I was happy to see that the vote was about 75% of the bishops.
Right.
Said to go ahead with the drafting of the document. That was significantly higher than the expectation was.
Yeah, massively.
And
people
try to read the tea leaves and of the what the bishops are going to do and who's where, and you know, they're saying 55 or 60% they thought was going to be the vote to say go ahead, and it was 75%. So that's very encouraging. To me, that they are really taking this seriously, and I think it's something that that needs to be done.
Well, I also think, too, that there are bishops who are working with other bishops, and they may have been instructed how to vote. So I don't even think the number is that high, that they should not do a document. But what I find so arrogant, I guess, for lack of a better word, are all these people who are telling the bishops or telling the press what the Catholic doctrine should be in the face of what the Catholic doctrine is. And so how do you suggest, after 16 years in public life and your father before you, how do you suggest that we handle the arrogance of the politicians that are calling for the bishops to change or not weaponize the Eucharist or change their plans? How do you suggest we combat that?
Well, if you, most people who are in, who have been elected to any office, have a, you know, not everyone, but many have a certitude about what they feel in what they believe, and their, you know, their role is important as a leader. And I always try to remind myself of, yes, I had an important leadership role, but that didn't mean I know everything. But it's sometimes hard because I often felt that people expected me to know everything.
You mean you don't? As the only pro-life congressman, Dan, I think that you did know. But go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, I didn't know.
You sure knew about the life issue.
And I don't know everything. So I think that's what we have here. And I think if you are involved in politics, you get very wrapped up. You see everything. I mean, and this is one of the most difficult things of being in public life, being a politician, is you are 24/7. You have to be on your game.
Yeah.
You have to be thinking about, you know, and by that I mean you have to always be thinking about what do I do, what do
right.
I say here or there, and you start to see everything as a game that you
right.
need to win.
Right.
And that's a real, it's a real danger.
And especially now with social media and Twitter, I mean, you could be at Mass, you know, with your wife and maybe not receiving, somebody could snap a picture of it and tweet it out and say, you know, Congressman Lipinski didn't go to Mass this Sunday. And it could just be something like you ate past the hour that you're supposed to fast. You know, there could be a...
Celebrating our nation's birthday and the unalienable rights bestowed on us by our Creator, this is the Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Koska Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Koska is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Frelick co-hosting together.
And so, I my heart goes out to a lot of people there because it seems like your life is 24/7. As you say, you always have to be on, but you're always also kind of under a microscope, especially now.
And you can imagine. And again, I didn't write this piece, and I'm not excusing anyone for signing on to this in what was said. But I also, like I said, some of these people I still consider friends,
right?
And I'm, I want to be, I don't want to push them away. But on the other hand, I think it's important that, I help them and all of us learn as I continue to learn about the Eucharist in Holy Communion. And so, I just think that it's you get. There are people out there who are looking at who didn't sign this.
Right.
And I'm sure all the abortion lobby is looking at, okay, who are the Catholic Democrats in the House who did not sign this, and why did they not sign it? And they may have already gotten a call.
Right.
Asking them, why did you not sign this? Because
right.
As a pro-choice Democrat, Catholic, you should have signed this. Are you not really with us?
Right, right. And of course, as you know from what happened to you in your primary, they bring with them a lot of money, a lot of clout. I know, for example, that Planned Parenthood Actions Fund has on their own website, if you do not support, for example, abortion after 20 weeks, we will not fund you. We will not support you. And my understanding is they gave the Biden campaign $45 million in funds. But with those funds come commitments, right? And I know that they poured, $3 million into your opponent's campaign in a primary, the abortion lobby did?
Yeah, $3 million in 2018, and I think that it had to have been at least that much in 2020. I've never added it all up. There's a billboard that just finally came down about a month ago from some Men for Choice or some made-up group.
Uh-huh.
There's money coming in from all over the place against me on the abortion issue.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, that's right. Yeah, I remember that Men's for Choice. But I remember, too, they not only did they put a ton of money into your opponent's campaign, but also they flew in campaign workers. They flew in boots on the ground to lobby against you. And, one of the points that must have been when you narrowly beat Marie Newman in that first round when she ran against you. In the second round, she had these television commercials about the church she was baptized at and the Catholic hospital where she was born. But it's interesting that all of her policy positions, for the most part, with save maybe one or two, are diametrically opposed to what the Catholic Church teaches. But obviously the fact that you were a serious Catholic must have polled negatively against her, or they wouldn't have gone after that in that way. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think clearly she had to try to paint herself as a Catholic. There's a lot of Catholics, especially Catholic Democrats in the district, and I think things weren't playing well for her, so she had her talked about where she was baptized.
It was ridiculous.
I hate to say it, but it worked. Because
no, it
people,
did. People believed it.
People
yep.
saw that commercial, and they still mention it to me that, yeah. Oh, she's from Beverly, or she's from whatever.
Right,
whatever
she was born at Little Company and was baptized at Barnabas. Oh,
yes.
No, I remember the ad, and
right.
I thought, oh, this is crafty. But, you know, we have actually have a question that a listener has just messaged to us. Mary and Loretta, we'd love to hear Dan's take on how he thinks we might be better able to deal with polarization and how we can talk to more, quote, liberal types about life issues.
Well, you know, and this is not something new, that second part. The whole idea of, and we hear over and over again, and we know who the, you know, there's the Justice Democrats group, AOC, and those others. I think it is terrible that we have allowed their version of what justice is to take that word justice from us, and to take that, you know, the frame this issue, the abortion issue, as being anti-woman.
Right.
And that is something that I think a lot of young people have, you know, because this is an issue, as other issues have really, you know, our society has really turned away from the truth on other issues. This is one issue where you still have, you have a good number of young people who I think they understand, the people who will actually think about this for themselves and understand justice for the unborn.
Right.
And what that means, what we are actually talking about here.
Right.
That this is a child, and we were all once there, and that's what the other side doesn't want people to think about. And we just I realized this a couple of years ago, that the whole idea of justice, that is a Christian idea.
Mm-hmm.
But we have allowed that to be taken from us.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's been co-opted.
I think that,
yeah, it's been co-opted. Were you surprised by the number of your former colleagues who tweeted out things like, you know, but what about the death penalty? Why isn't Bill Barr being denied communion? Did that particular angle surprise you?
It did not surprise me. It's an issue that, especially now that the catechism has been updated, Pope Francis updated it,
right,
on the death penalty. It's not surprising to me that people would go to that. In Bill Barr, you know, those who know who Bill Barr is know that he is Catholic, and so that did not surprise me.
Yeah, but you know what was interesting was, you know, the critiques, and again, that shows you how, as you point out, you're still learning. A lot of people are still learning, but people don't seem to want to do the necessary sort of digging to find out the truth and to find out more. I mean, the one of the things I think that a number of Congressman Liu's followers said, you know, the bishop said nothing about the ramp up in the federal death penalty in January. And I said, well, no, as a matter of fact, Archbishop Nauman, who is the chairman of the U.S. Bishops Pro-Life Committee, probably the most pro-life person I know, whose own father was murdered, gave a beautiful talk when the federal death penalties began being used again, and talking about how, you know, money used to execute prisoners would be much better spent. You know, his mom was left with two boys under the age of two, and her husband murdered during a robbery attempt, would be much better spent helping families, helping the victims' families financially. You know, there was no GoFundMe back then. There was, you know, not really a lot of places a young widow with two little kids could go for help. And it was very moving. And so I did, tweet that back to a couple of people. one of whom actually said, "You're very. I'm really sorry." And you know what angered me was that speech. I think if it had been given by a liberal Democrat somebody who was pro-abortion, would have gone viral. But because it didn't fit the narrative, you know, chairman of the Bishop's Pro-Life Committee, you know, most anti-abortion bishop in the country, who reprimanded Kathleen Sebelius when he was her bishop, actually opposes the death penalty. So it was almost like, to me, almost a suppression of his position on that, which I just thought, you know, it didn't fit their narrative. I just thought that was terribly unjust, to use your word.
Well, that's the big problem. The first question there was about polarization, and we are so polarized now. In nothing, we are being fed two ways to look at the world. And as I've been arguing recently, you know, we have our partisan divide is a sectarian divide. And there is no understanding of any different way than these two that were being offered. And our government doesn't work because we cannot, the way our government was set up, and I won't go too deep into a political science talk here, but the way our government was set up, it was set up to require compromise. And if you view the other side as evil, you cannot compromise with them. You can't even talk with them. You can't deliberate when it comes to the public policy. Right. And neither party, and we're focusing on the Democratic Party, and I clearly have, I was member of Congress for 16 years as a Democrat, but there are ways that the Democratic Party has really gone off the rails. But we, neither party is, you know, fits, a Catholic doesn't fit perfectly into either party. And right. We need to proclaim Catholic social teaching in the fullness of Catholic social teaching.
Right.
And let people know, and this is a concern that I have, and I've said I'm concerned that people choose one party or the other based on one issue, and then they feel like they need to support all the other issues that party, whatever position that party takes on those issues. Nope. And I think there are some young Catholics who are pro-life, but you know, most other issues, they are, you know, they are drawn to the Democratic Party, and
right.
that they will sort of give up being pro-life because they feel like they have to in order
right, exactly.
to be a Democrat.
Yep. That's really
and
sad.
So,
yeah, because I think, you know, again, as you say, we don't really belong in either party. You know, Catholics, we're kind of politically homeless, but we're particularly homeless. We're homeless in a special way in the Democratic Party because, again, they won't permit a different viewpoint to exist, certainly not, as you learned, certainly not on the national level.
No, but you still have 25, somewhere between a quarter and a third of Democratic voters in the country call themselves pro-life.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important that it's important for the pro-life movement not to be relegated to one party.
Right, I agree with
and
you. Yeah.
I always said it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me that the abortion lobby, you know, saw my one vote out of 435 in the House as being that important that they had to spend all this money and these resources to get rid of me, but they didn't. They couldn't stand to have
one vote,
a pro-life
one
voice
vote.
In the
yep.
Democratic Party,
yep.
And that's, you know, that's what it meant to them,
yeah.
to have a dissenting voice within the party. So I think, you know, that just goes to show how important it should be for us to have, you know, you try to maintain, you know, pro-life voices in the Democratic Party. I know there's some people who are trying to get John Bel Edwards, the Democratic governor, pro-life governor of Louisiana, trying to get him to run for president. And just to hear that voice, I'd love to see it, to hear that voice in a Democratic presidential debate, a pro-life voice. It would mean so much.
Okay. Yeah. No. I agree with you. And you know what? I think, for example, if, you know, Governor Robert Casey of Pennsylvania had actually been the nominee, I think there would have been no stopping the Democratic Party. And I think the same for John Bel Edwards, because you would have Catholics then who would come back from the Republican Party. They really would. You know, or even a vice presidential candidate, like, for example, you know, if they had chosen you as a vice presidential candidate, I think there would have been, you know, I don't think things would have been as close. But unfortunately, the Democratic Party gave Catholics who really feel strongly about the abortion issue nowhere to go. So, but again, we thank you for being that voice and for being that presence in Congress all those years, those 16 years. And I know it came at no small personal cost to you and to your wife, Judy. So really thanks to both of you for the real sacrifice that you made, not only for your country, but for fellow Catholics. And we were always so proud that you were one of us. And thank you so much for giving us so much time today, Congressman Lipinski.
Thank you. And anyone who wants to follow what I'm doing, danlipinski.com,
okay.
my website.
And what's your new Twitter handle? Yeah.
DanLipinski2.
Okay. At DanLipinski2 on
yes,
Twitter.
Yes, because at DanLipinski1 is my political.
I see.
And
okay.
So I had to come up with something new, so I went with Dan Lipinski2.
Okay.
But that's, I know that's huge. Because
very creative.
I just want to, I didn't. Most of the people who were, not most, many of the people who were following me at Dan Lipinski were trolls. So
oh, okay.
I figured
well,
I would
yeah, now your true I, friends were, your only true friends were listening to this station, so I can tell you that.
So,
and I hope they all
very
follow
good,
you. Well,
good.
Thank you. Good luck. Good luck with all you're doing in the future, and thank you for giving us so much
thank
time.
You.
And
yes.
Again, you can read Congressman Lipinski's wonderful article, Catholic Politicians, Abortion, and the Eucharist, at firstthings.com under the web exclusives. Congressman, thank you again, and have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you. You too.
Celebrating our nation's birthday and the unalienable rights bestowed on us by our Creator, this is the Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Frelick co-hosting together for Father Anthony Bush on Winds of Change. And, you know, talking about our last guest, Congressman Daniel Lipinski, he certainly was most generous with his time. But what I'm so excited about is that he's got this wonderful article in First Things that Mary referenced before we went on the break. And I love that the person that they chose to to go after and get rid of as a congressman is now writing from a whole new platform.
Yeah.
And so he's bringing his knowledge of what's happening in Congress. I loved what he said about the president's budget, that it's just a suggestion.
And you know what? Honestly, and again, he's so, you know, he's, as I mentioned at the outset, because you were talking about Father John Schmidt, your former pastor who was, you know, trained as an engineer. So engineers are trained to look at things logically,
yes.
right? And so,
yes.
And methodically. And so Congressman Lipinski has his undergraduate degree from Northwestern and his master's from Stanford in engineering, but then his PhD from Duke in political theory or political philosophy, one of the two. So he has kind of like the perfect combination.
Right.
And we were talking one time, for listeners who don't know, the congressman and I went to high school together, so we have known each other for many years. And we were just talking about sort of what people think that, you know, being in Congress is all about, and it's not like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's makeup videos or whatever it is she's doing on YouTube.
She didn't know what a dishwasher or disposal was.
Garbage disposal. She was terrified of the garbage disposal, and does her skincare routines for people. And you know, it's not all these big dramatic moments, you know, where you're debating hotly an abortion bill, though that happens from time to time. But a lot of it is very detailed, very minute, minutia kind of work, where you're looking at like a transportation bill. And,
right.
and the congressman was on the transportation committee, I think, his whole 16 years because of his engineering background, where you're looking at, you know, very detailed, complicated facts that go into creating new law and new policy. But you know what? That affects people's lives. If you've ever waited for, you know, a train to pass, you know, on Cumberland there, right at Grand Avenue, and sat for 15 to 20 minutes while, you know, those things affect people's real lives.
That's
you know,
right.
That affects your daily commute. It affects everything. And so, you know, that's 90% of being in Congress is that kind of grunt work where you're doing bill markups and you're looking at, you know, you're looking at things like that, and you're going to hearings, and you're trying to figure out what is the best thing for the people in your district that you're supposed to be representing. You know, not turning yourself into some kind of giant social justice warrior, and which it seems to have become sort of the way Congress people are running their campaigns and shaping themselves. You know, and creating personas for themselves that don't really exist in real life. And you know, the one thing I've always been so proud to be friends with Congressman Lipinski, because he is who he is. You know, he's a Catholic that goes to Mass every Sunday. He believes what the church teaches. He's a very prayerful man. He's, you know, a very principled man. And it's I'm glad that he went out. He lost because of the millions of dollars poured in against him in that campaign. But he went out with his Catholic faith intact,
yep.
his dignity intact. And I know the Lord's going to use him in a very new and powerful way. So
right.
we really need to keep his family and him and ask that God really direct his steps to the way to best be. And the good thing about him, he wants to do what God wants. He wants to be placed where God would like him and where he can be the most used. So, but this whole Eucharistic battle has just been, you know, as we said at the outset, so fascinating
right.
that all of a sudden people are actually really interested in who receives communion in the Catholic. Who knew?
Exactly.
That this was such a you know, important topic for the National Abortion Rights Action League.
Yes, and it's important to know that there are resources out there, that you do not have to go this alone. The church teaches what the Eucharist is, body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus. And now that people are starting to weigh in, there are some wonderful articles. I would recommend that everyone read the article in the New York Times today by Elizabeth Diaz and Ruth Graham. And they talk about Beyond the Politics of Communion, a 2,000-year-old holy mystery. So just from the onset,
in a secular paper like the New York Times. Yeah.
Yes, and so.
So we're getting opportunities here to really talk about, you know, the one sample example I'm using is when Notre Dame Cathedral was burning, the mm-hmm. chaplain, the Catholic
yes.
priest, who's the chaplain
yes.
of the Paris Fire Department, risked his life and ran in to get the Blessed Sacrament out of the tabernacle.
Right.
And also to get what we believe is the actual crown of thorns, to get that relic. But primarily, he was going in to get the Blessed Sacrament
Amen.
And to rescue it. And no one risks their life for a symbol.
Nobody.
So I thought that was a very powerful witness. But also, you know, what I've been saying to people is, Why do you think Catholics genuflect when we go into a church? It's not because we need a little, you know, Pilates exercise. It's because we believe that in that tabernacle, and that's also why there is always a candle lit next to it.
Right.
In that tabernacle is God himself.
Amen.
And that's why it's important for us to receive worthily. And, you know, you've seen My Cousin Vinny, right?
One yes.
The best legal movie of all time. To Kill a Mockingbird, My Cousin Vinny. But there's that scene, you know, sort of towards the beginning of the trial where he keeps showing up for court in kind of bizarre outfits. And the judge says to him, you know, Mr. Gambini, the guy who played Herman Munster, Fred Gwynne, you know, I do not expect you to be coming into my courtroom dressed that way. And so he says, and he goes out and he gets some other outlandish suit that he doesn't realize is not appropriate. And so when he comes in and the judge says, you know, I'm holding you in contempt of court. And he's like, wait. Because of your clothing. He says, you were serious about that? So I feel like this is giving an opportunity for people, Catholics and I, to say, wow, yes. The church is actually serious about it, so serious about it that they may deny, you know, they may have to deny communion. And I'd like to point out, too, just as someone who worked for the Catholic Church for so many years, often, you know, conversations with politicians over this issue, they happen in private. You know, yes. they happen when a bishop, first a pastor probably would do it and say, listen, you know, you vote in a certain way. You have a public position in a certain way. It is a scandal for you to receive publicly. And right. I would like you to refrain from doing so. They don't like, no one wants a big dramatic moment where either a pastor or a extraordinary minister of communion is faced with having to say, I'm sorry, and having to turn away a person. So we like to do that in private to say, right. listen, really, you should not be, receiving at this point, you're not in a state of grace. Subjectively, you're not in a state of grace.
And I don't know if you're aware of this, Mary, but Senator Murkowski from Alaska, she was denied communion based on the way she has been voting by a priest in Alaska right. who immediately following was transferred. So there are priests, good and holy men of God, that are risking their prominence in the church.
Their priestly assignments, their ability to minister, that sort of thing.
Right. But there are some really good articles that are out there right now, and I would highly recommend that people read Thomas McKenna's open letter to 55 Catholic bishops who voted against drafting.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's
how have you read something that I have not on this topic?
Mary, I don't know.
I thought I knew it all.
I know you do.
Oh, the Lord
I don't know.
See how God humbles us? I think I'm the expert. And then, okay, Loretta, where is it? Tell
okay.
me.
Okay. I got it online at Catholic Action, one word.
Okay.
At Catholic Action. oneword.org. So
okay.
Catholic Action at catholicaction.org. And
okay.
it was today. And it's
okay.
their press release after writing this letter. And there's so many wonderful things in it that I get so excited. Last week, Bishop Papraki from the Diocese of Springfield.
Yes. Formerly of Chicago.
Right.
Terrific. I saw that. A
yes.
terrific, exhortation.
Yes.
Or
and he stressed
terrific.
that the Latin bishops, Latin America bishops, they've already done this.
Right.
They have.
They spoke up. That's where Eucharistic coherence comes from, right?
That's
it's
right.
from that document from the Latin American bishops. And at the time, Archbishop Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio was one of them.
Right. And so I guess my question is, do our United States Congress, do they want to write to the Latin American bishops in retrospect? So, I mean, they make so many good and exciting points so that people can see this has been a 2,000-year-old mystery, and this, the teaching of our church, must be upheld. And it is Catholics that can do it, because I find it the ultimate arrogance yeah. of bishops, politicians, anybody else that's trying to tell us in our church what we are to do, even if they're not part of our church.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
another.
Well, and abortion groups certainly don't have the right to tell Catholic bishops, you know, how they will, you know, deal with
right.
Catholics, lay Catholics in right. their own church. And, you know, it's very interesting. You know, there was that unanimous Supreme Court decision that came out of Missouri, the Lutheran school
right.
Playground case. And, it's Chief Justice Roberts said, you know, it's the First Amendment is there to protect the government from interfering with the internal governance of churches.
Yes.
And so, listeners, thank you again for being with us. We hope that you have a beautiful, blessed 4th of July holiday. We will not be here next Monday because of the holiday. We will be on vacation with our own families. But until we are here again with you, count on our prayers. Please pray for us. This has been Mary Hallin Fiorito and Loretta Fralick sitting in for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change. Have a great week, and God bless you all. Can you see?